Today's episode is Personal Budget. Over to you.
Another day, another drama in the world of SEND parenting. That's all I can say. We very often talk about the experience as an SEND parent or as SEND parents and how you just get people dismissing you all the time and making out that you're exaggerating and life isn't that hard for you and you're using your child as some kind of attention-seeking tool, and it's just so frustrating because yet again we have spent another emotional day having to deal with all the crap that comes with SEND parenting, with having to fight for the basic needs and rights that your child should be entitled to anyway as a human being, and the admin. I mean, we have sat here for a whole evening having to do admin. I've been filling out forms and that kind of thing, and my husband's been constructing letters, and now we're doing this podcast as a bit of a vent. This isn't your typical podcast where we discuss and then kind of advise. There might be some of that thrown in informally, but I will admit this is more of a vent.
Therapy. It's a therapy session, a free one.
It is. We're annoyed, and we know we're not the only one to go through this, so we are sharing it with you. And for anyone who isn't aware of the kind of things that we go through as SEND parents, then this hopefully will give some insight as to why we actually end up getting quite agitated. Some get very hostile, and some become broken, and some suffer with really severe mental health issues. And do you know what? All of these things are of no fault of the individual. You are driven to despair through a system that is so flawed, and although you have all these people saying yes, we're going to make change, we can see these flaws, and that's very hopeful. I've had moments where I've thought, yes, oh, this is so hopeful, yes, things are going to change. But actually, do you know what, 5-10 years down the line is great for those people, and I really want to improve things for the future generations, but that's in the here and now, it's not good enough. You can see the flaws, and they are easily corrected, and people put barriers up. I appreciate there's a lot of red tape. I've been told that from the inside. That
but why?
A lot of red tape. But this stuff...
It doesn't have to be this way.
It doesn't. It's affecting people's lives. It's affecting our life. And it's ridiculous. I just cannot tell you over the last few years how much is taken from us. We've explained before how we've had to record everything with our children, and you're having to constantly prove and justify yourself, and you haven't really had the opportunity to enjoy your children growing up because everything they do becomes about collecting evidence. Everything they do is kind of pathologized so that, you know, it fits into this deficit model, and it's horrible. That's kind of how you start to view everything, even if that's not what your core belief is. You kind of are programmed to feel this way, and you don't do it to other your child. You do it to try and get them actually the recognition and support they need. This system is just broken, and I'm so angry with it. So I'm going to pass you back to my husband to explain what has triggered this today.
I didn't even read the email, so...
I read it to you.
Yeah, but let's face it, I'm very good at remembering stuff, yeah.
You obviously remembered enough because you've written that letter. So
it would have been nicer to be able to read it, but that's not going to work, is it? Because it's still ongoing, I guess.
Not at the moment, but watch this space. I will probably post it at some point. We just need to fine-tune everything that we're creating at the moment.
But I will personally read it when we're allowed to, because it'd be quite fun to get quite angry and to read it in the way I intend it.
Your initial reading, though, that you read to me not long before trying to record this, was emotive and passionate. So you might think you're just coming across as very angry and aggressive, and that's obviously, you know, of course anger is in there, but no, it's actually, it triggered an emotion in me because you can see in your eyes, your body language, your voice, it's the passion, it's the exhaustion.
I'm beyond fucking fuming.
Yeah.
I am beyond it. In a nutshell, out of nowhere, well, it's not nowhere, it took a prompt from our side to go, any update on the personal budget? Can you give a timeline briefly before I recite what I've written? When did we send the budget off?
Oh my gosh, I don't remember. All I'm going to say is early 2021, we were told that the EHCP request was accepted, and then Not long after we applied for it. So it had to be before May.
Okay, so...
It's awful that I can't remember, and I apologise, but it was earlier in the year, and May is probably at the latest date, so it's probably quite securely before then, to be fair.
So the budget was... request was sent off the back of the fact that mainstream school wasn't working for our eldest son. And we...
And it wasn't just us that came to that conclusion. The school actually had to go to panel and say, we're really sorry, this gives us no pleasure. And we were told the same. We had a phone call saying, this brings us no pleasure, but we've gotten to the point where we cannot support your son here.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously we have every right to say, well, he's staying there. We could have done that.
We could have, but again, the psychological ramifications of putting an undiagnosed special needs child in a mainstream setting to attempt to fit him into a system that does not support him.
And not just, like, both of our children are autistic and we've made it very clear how different they both are. And we know that our youngest will have difficulties, but we still feel with support, he might actually have the ability to kind of survive or thrive in school, and we'll be watching very closely. But our eldest, I knew it wasn't right for him before he went. I've told you before, I was really pushed into sending him so we could all get eyes on him and watch him, you know, basically deteriorate mentally. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. Because without that distress behaviour, he's not truly autistic. You can't be autistic if you're not having constant meltdowns and overloads. It's just insane that we let them get to this point. I'm so angry.
Heartbreaking to witness that.
We are living... in 2021, I can't believe that this is still the model. It's absolutely disgusting.
They don't give a shit about your child's psychological safety. It's all about proving a point.
Yes, it is.
And it's going...
And money.
Okay. Well, the money thing we'll debate a bit later, because financially, that doesn't make sense either.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah. We'll
come back to that.
add that to the shopping cart. We'll check out with that later.
Yeah, it's because otherwise I can see us going off on that tangent. So
we can easily tangent. Let's try not to. It's a piece of piss. But basically, long story short, he ended up being homeschooled. Now, the conditions of the homeschool is up for debate, and this is one of the contentious sticking points as part of this stupid little saga as it plays out.
So he was struggling at school. We applied for an HCP, but the school had already done so many things.
They did.
Sensory time, movement breaks, you know, all of the typical things that you'd have in a classroom, like things that don't work for him, quite frankly, because he's a PDA-er, but they tried it anyway. So, you know, and next to visual timetables, the reward, the praise, you know, again, doesn't work for him, but they tried it because at that point it was about trial and error of everything and let's see what happens. They learned quickly that what we were telling everybody was true, that there is no consistency.
There isn't. What will work one day will not work the next.
Exactly, because that's just not how he rolls.
It isn't.
You know, and I think that's the thing. People go, oh, autism. Oh, official timetable. It doesn't work for all autistic kids. Some autistic really, that helps them.
Yep.
And some autistic kids, particularly the PDAs, if anything, it actually made him more anxious seeing this long list of things that he had to do.
One man's incentive is another man's demand.
Exactly. You know, and one man's kind of clarity and it's just crazy. So that didn't work for him. There were a lot of things that didn't work for him. So they actually said, could we put him on a part-time timetable? We were actually going to request it and didn't have to.
Yeah.
They identified on their own, which is, I think, amazing for a school because they're not all like this.
They tried.
They really did. And they gave him an unofficial one-to-one every morning he was in school. I have not heard of many schools doing this. Like, they literally recruited this member of staff, not initially to work with him, but as soon as they realised she had PDA, ADHD and ASD experience, she got placed with my son.
Yep.
We felt seen, heard, privileged, grateful, you know, and he couldn't have had any more. And yet he was still running out of class. He was still so distressed in that environment. And... you know, I think even one of the members of staff, the Senko, actually went on a PDA course over the summer in her own time that I believe she funded in order to specifically support him and obviously in case any other children come on their radar.
Absolutely.
Who are like him. This is the kind of school he was at. We're so lucky.
They were forward thinking. They were. And it's a shame because I'm sure at some point the things will be in place to accommodate those type of kids.
And do you know what? Above all, they listened to us. They worked with us. We worked with each other. Like, you know, it worked both ways. We collaborated and he couldn't have been any more supported. So anyway, it wasn't working. So we decided to apply for the AHCP, assuming that he'd have this really thorough assessment and something new would come from it. But that wasn't the case.
Something groundbreaking.
When the AHCP was issued, there was nothing new. It was all the same things that the school were already doing. But for some reason, this was not identified by the panel. And we, at this point, you know, had to listen to the school's concerns because he wasn't coping in that environment, even with the provisions that were put in place, even with that support. And they were so brilliant, even with things like transitions. If he couldn't come in for a certain time, they were not phased by it. They understood.
Chill.
They tried transition toys. Like, there's just so many things, too many things for me to list that this school tried. And anything we suggested, like, could we try this? They did. He would really struggle coming home. So what they would do is give him time before he came home to kind of chill and make the transition easier so that hopefully he wouldn't melt down when he got home. When he got to school, he was not expected to go straight into learning. He went and had sensory time. I cannot actually praise this school highly enough for the nurture that they gave him and actually us as well. Okay, so when this school,
the good aspects,
when this same school turns around and says this is not easy for us, but no, we can't support him, and the EHCP hasn't really detailed anything new, we already know that he's going to continue to fail and continue to be distressed and traumatized. We have to advise that he shouldn't be here. And it was suggested that really specialist provision would be the right course of action for him moving forward.
The school did recommend that. Yeah, they did.
Yeah, and they said, you know, we realise it's not that easy with funding and places and all of those kinds of things, but this is really where he belongs because, you know, as a mainstream school, there's only so much we can do. Even with the funding, everything, there was nothing more they could do. But this was ignored totally by panel, leaving us in a position of, okay, the school is saying they can't meet the needs, and the panel are kind of, in what they did was throw the school under the bus in one sense and say that it's the school's incompetence or the school wasn't doing enough or the school didn't really want to support, and that was just not the case at all.
No, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, in our situation, that was not the case, and we explicitly said that, that they tried their best. And they exhausted all avenues, and the HCP recommendations was some kind of generic copy and paste.
That offered
no new groundbreaking way of managing the situation. So again,
we had a withdrawn child. We had a child who was melting down a lot.
He was broken.
He was a different boy. And I would literally come down from bed routine every evening and cry.
He was forlorn.
He was. And
he was a shell of himself.
It was horrendous. He used to go in and he wouldn't talk about anything. We're a very nurturing, cuddly family. And some people say, oh, that's not autistic. It's just rubbish. I'm autistic and I'm very tactile with people I'm familiar with.
Yeah.
And obviously, these are my children.
With people you trust.
This is my family.
And love.
And all of a sudden, like this part of him was lost. It actually scared me that I thought we'd lost our son in a way, like the one we knew. He just was not the same person. And he was unhappy all the time and he would cry or he'd just, you know, he goes off into his own little world sometimes, but it wasn't in a good way. And if you did get anything from him, it would be these most random statements and it would always be at nighttime. He'd go into his compression blanket and he'd only talk to me if I came into his house, which was the compression blanket, and I had to go under there every evening. And then he'd say a few things, but if I started to probe or question, you need to go now, mummy. Night, night, mummy. You can go now. That kind of thing.
So he's shutting down your opportunity.
He just couldn't talk about it. The only thing that really ever we had a discussion about, a proper one, was he said, were children nice to you at school, mummy? And I said, actually, no. Quite a lot were not very nice to me. And he was having the same experience. Now, some people will say I should have lied, but I'm not going to lie. And I think also if I'd lied, he wouldn't have opened up about his experience.
Absolutely.
And he actually said, you know, the children aren't being kind to him and explained some of the behaviours. But the more I probed, the more he shut down. But every night, you know, I'd kiss him and he'd just be staring into space and not respond. And he'd cry for no reason. He'd have meltdowns for no obvious reason. And of course, as time progressed and we started to realise what was going on, and he was being picked on at school by a group of children in particular. And they found him odd because he makes noises and...
He's just different.
He finds that environment so difficult. And a lot of that is not, oh, because he's autistic. It's actually the sensory part of him.
Yeah.
Now, all autistics are going to have some kind of sensory difference. But his are so prominent. And I've said this time and time again. It's been obvious since the age of about 2 and a half.
There seems to be a theme here.
And, you know, to be left at this stage where... You're not believed, he's not supported, there's no referrals. It's just, you know, obviously that's just another story which we've already shared. But you just feel so angry because we've put him into this system trusting that, okay, if we do our bit, which is basically throw our baby into the school system so you can see him actually struggle, that we'll get some support. And that isn't what's happened. They want him to continue suffering and continue struggling.
To tick a fucking box.
And for what? It is so apparent at this stage.
Try that, it doesn't work anymore. Okay, yeah. I'll go tick a box. Really? You didn't see it coming a mile off with the fact that you've offered no difference to what's already been done.
Everybody saw it at preschool. Everybody saw it in reception. It kicked off to another level in year one when the demand changed and he was expected to sit and do things.
Things got formal.
And it was literally starting year one within about probably 2 weeks that they were like, wow, this isn't working.
2 weeks.
So
it was literally, I think, what, before Christmas when it was like, a couple of months and then he's on a reduced timetable?
Yeah. Oh, I think he was on the reduced timetable earlier than that, if I'm honest with you, but... it's just been an absolute mess, to be honest with you. And what's been hard for us as parents is to put your child knowingly... How many days did I cry over, I can't believe I'm knowingly putting my child into this harm, essentially? I don't know what the word would be. I've lost my words.
No, absolutely, because you feel guilt. Because your primary objective as a parent is to protect them. Until they're old enough to look after themselves.
And we keep being told by the professionals, but you need to send him in so we can get eyes on him. So every day, this child's resisting going in. He struggles with the transition and getting ready. It was very difficult. And then he goes in and he has an awful time. School could not have done any more, and yet he still couldn't cope there, which is... Alarm bells ringing that this is not working for him. So when the EHCP comes and basically says, oh, try a one-to-one, and that's already happened, what do they think is going... What's the difference in the one-to-one?
It's a magic wand and suddenly it's going to work.
What annoyed me a bit with the EHCP was how it did target the schools. The school should do this and the school should do that. The school did all of that and actually more. They went above and they went beyond. And
they bothered. They really did try to make it work because found they actually liked him.
They were
very fond of him.
And actually, we know where the teachers go at lunchtime, like on a certain day of the week. So
a certain coffee
shop. You know, I wasn't going to say it was a coffee shop, but
doesn't matter.
Yeah, they did go there.
Teachers need caffeine.
Yeah, of course they do. And says the teacher who can't have caffeine because of my chronic illness.
Yeah, that's not.
So I never had it. So everyone's like, "Oh, how do you cope without caffeine? Adrenaline."
Yep.
They loved him so much and still took an active interest in him up until him off rolling, really.
Even after
that, they still, as a school, allowed him to have one-to-one reading sessions until the end of term. And that was just so that he could have someone else to kind of show his hard work off to, and just to have that link. And they didn't have to do that. And once a week, that's what happened. And it might not sound like a big deal, but that was a big deal to us as a family. We appreciated that. They did not have to give him anything, and they did. He was nothing to do with them. They still asked after him. We've seen them out and about, some of the teachers, and they are literally all over him. You know, it's... And admittedly, he doesn't recognise them all, if I'm truthful, because he's not good at recognising people. But... He really did appreciate some of the things. And there's a couple of teachers at the coffee shop he did recognise. And he used to get so excited seeing them. So this is not something that was lightly decided.
No, it wasn't.
It's not that he hated the teachers or hated some of the children, but he was unable to connect with people because he was in distress all the time and he was overloaded. He was unable to work because he was overloaded.
Which then, that was one of the hardest things, wasn't it? Because we know that he isn't...
He's able in an academic sense. And we were getting reports all of the time saying basically like the lowest possible grade.
It didn't reflect his potential.
And then we'd get things like, oh, you know, he's just starting to learn his phonics. And I've told you this before, but he actually already knew his phonics going into school. But he didn't demonstrate them. I think it was by two.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter. But, he was really good at like photographically remembering things.
That's the whole point I'm leading with here. This was his bread and butter for years before he even started school. Yeah. It wasn't a big deal to him. So suddenly he can't access it. Well, that's another alarm bell, isn't it, really?
And what we were saying at the time was we understand that you can't, and I know this as a teacher myself, you can't grade him on things you're not witnessing.
But that doesn't mean it's not in there.
But it's frustrating because then what happens is low-level stuff is aimed at him, which is not right for a child. Yes, boring, isn't it? And they're not going to engage with it. But at the same time, he was so overwhelmed by that environment and the noise and all the other things there.
Yeah.
That, you know, he couldn't achieve his best.
Is it a disadvantage because he's dealing with multiple things at once?
Yeah.
Not just the actual learning criteria.
The teacher said the children don't bat an eyelid at the noises he makes and things. Some weren't kind to him, but generally speaking, they accepted him, you know, making those noises. That's just what he does.
But we're fully aware that as kids get a little bit older, they start being a little bit more mean.
They do. And people say all the time, oh, kids are so accepting. And you're like, some are.
To a degree.
You know, I think we can't sugarcoat this. It's not in all cases.
Some parents are arseholes and raise arseholes. Let's put it out there.
Word.
No, but, I am going to put it out there. There are some right little dickheads.
But anyway, I think what the point I'm trying to make is we've put him into the system. He's clearly not coping. We apply for an AHCP. Nothing new is mentioned. He's already withdrawn. He's already melting down. The school are like pleading with us, really.
Yep.
You know, and like I said,
there's a drain on them.
They even told us we can't tell you not to have him here at the end of the day. You're entitled to still send him. But what we need to decide, and this actually came from the school, is this right for his mental health? Because we are even seeing how it's affecting him. And then now that you've told us what's happening at home, that's a very big concern.
His favourite part of the day was coming home in the car with me.
It was. And if I said, what did you like at school? It's lunchtime.
Yeah, it was. Always.
Literally just eating. It would never be any part of the day. So fast forward to the EHCP panel. So they have agreed that yes, he needs an EHCP, but nothing new is mentioned. They then have a go at the school, and then obviously we've just electively home educated. When we say, look, as you're not going to even look into specialist provision, which at that time I'll hold my hands up, even if they had said we have a special school in mind for him, I would have said he needs some time out of school completely to recover from this school-based trauma. And we had already discussed this, that regardless of what happened next, he needed time to just be
himself
and to recover. And I am really pleased to say that him being at home, he's like returned to being our lovely little boy again.
He's full of life.
He's happy again.
It's so awesome to see it.
What we absolutely could not do, which is what the panel wanted us to do, the panel, they wanted us to throw him back into that system so they could just check, you know, just one more time whether or not he was going to sink or swim. And no, we weren't willing to do it.
It's the equivalent of tying rocks to a drowning person and seeing if they can float to the surface. It's bullshit.
So
it's not even, there's not even a definitive right. For example, go on then, for how long? How are you going to measure? There's no detail.
We were told, well, that's your choice. And I said, no, I've actually been advised. Choice. Now, there's a group on Facebook, and I don't know if I'm allowed to name it, actually, but it's an SEND group, and it's for my local area. And I received a lot of advice on there from parents who've already been through all this nonsense, saying to me, whatever you do, do not say you want to electively home educate. Say that you want supported learning at home or education other than at school, which is EOTAS. Because if you don't, the local authority will think great and wash their hands of you. So I made this very, very clear. We spoke to our case officer who mentioned the personal budget. Now, I'd already had this mentioned to me online. And I said, well, I've been told that, again, we won't get any funding if we're electively home educating. And I want to make it clear that is not what we are doing. And she said, oh, no, no, it's not like that anymore. I think you'll find that actually now it's different. And the personal budget can actually be applied for by like anybody in the situation of their child not being at school and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Off the record elsewhere, I was told, yes, yes, there is a personal budget, but it's like winning the lottery to have it actually accepted, which we are now going through this experience of that. So
the funniest thing about it was, I think the amount we requested was, I'm gonna throw it out there, I swear it was about £2,000. And what's the average kid funded in school? Is it about £4,000?
I think you did some research and it was about £4,000.
It's about £4,000 apparently that gets spent on the kid in mainstream school.
And he would have needed more because of the specialist provision. And for example, to actually fund the TA for just the mornings, I think they quoted, didn't the school give a quote of £10,000 to £11,000 or something like that?
So you can start adding this up. Our small little budget request for just that year would have been about £2,000. And one of the largest items was an iPad. Because why not? We wanted
Which they will think is frivolous, but your reasoning was that this iPad could be used as a computer. It could be used as like a writing pad with a stylus.
Yeah.
And so you had everything covered. And he's a PDAer who thrives with a digital curriculum, and we didn't have the resources home to help him. Now, that would have had to have been provided at some point at school.
Absolutely.
Because he would have needed a digital curriculum and these resources. So I think they just think any parent who asks for anything like that is just money grabbing. And you think, no, it's the reality of a child like him having to engage him, you know, with a digital curriculum. You need to have the resources to be able to do that.
He's not interested otherwise.
Initially, I told you not to apply for it. And you said, no. Listen, in the grand scheme of things, this will last for years.
We
won't need to ask for anything like this again.
No, we won't. This is the thing. You don't ask for it in year two, do you? Because it's still going strong from year one.
Exactly, and it should be for years.
You've probably got about 5 years on it.
So, yeah.
Realistically. So, what's the big fucking deal?
But, so the sticking point here is, we're told, look, even though the EHCP has nothing new in it, because it's been issued, he needs to go back into mainstream school and he needs to go in there further. But we were like, look, we're at a point where he can't any further go in. He's breaking down all the time. We were having constant meltdowns. He was miserable. And I said to them, you know, they said, well, that's your choice. And I said, can you explain where the choice actually is for me?
This is the thing. And that's why I got a little bit ranty in that letter, because I was like, that's an illusion of choice.
It is.
There's normally, I mean, I did a little table. I'm trying to recall some of it from my visual memory. Okay, so there were three columns. There was mainstream school. There was special school or specialist school. And then there was homeschooling, but EOTAS, meaning it pretty obvious, you know, EOTAS version of homeschool, as in supported learning.
But they're saying we're
you
not
bastards
entitled to it because
are supposed to.
They believe he can have his needs met at
But it wasn't.
So it's our choice.
It was not our choice.
I know that, but
so
this is what their argument is.
I went through the columns and I said,
to be.
I went through the columns and I said, look, here are your options. Get bullied in school, underachieve, be chewed up by the system, essentially, and being forced to attend somewhere which is psychologically damaging you.
That's so that you end up developing problems that have to be then mended later on in the system, which will cost more money. It just makes no sense.
Ironically, this is the screwed up situation. And also, it'll cost him a shit ton of money to keep him in mainstream. Because all the supported, you know, the extras, like I said, the one-to-one individual and their salary, it's not cost-effective. The fire just wanted a bloody iPad, and that's all I was asking for. They couldn't even do goddamn decency to supply that. We weren't asking for a lot.
And an autistic pushchair so that I could take him out because he gets tired.
He does. He taps out pretty early.
And they, you know, I think what it is as well, there's not even a, look, can we negotiate that maybe we do this instead? Or
there was nothing. It's a straight refusal.
But yes, we will. We do appreciate that the pushchair would be handy. Or no, there was no negotiation. It's just a point blank no. They just declined it and then didn't have the decency to let us know. Now, because of COVID, I kind of assumed, well, actually, I knew from speaking to different professionals that there was backlogs and, you know, that a lot of people weren't receiving responses, particularly in the timescales that we're supposed to be receiving them. And I didn't chase it up out of courtesy. And it's just, I find it comical how polite we are, even after all these years, and they have the audacity to speak to you and treat you like this.
Oh, that is officially over. I'm no longer polite. I don't give a fuck anymore.
And so, but I did chase it up because I thought, you know, this is a bit silly. They've, you know, it was kind of back in April that I think it was issued formally, and very beginning of April, from what I remember. So, yeah, it's not really good enough that we are now in August, at the very end of August, and we've had to chase them to find out what's going on. I just think it's not good enough.
And then what happened?
Then I was told that because the 8 weeks had passed, we can no longer take it to tribunal.
And I go, 8 weeks from what?
From the issue.
Of?
The AHCP.
What are you on about? The AHCP issue? Well, I'm on about the rejection.
No, the rejection, it can't be, we can't actually challenge it from the date of rejection because we were never given one.
That's the point I'm saying.
Right, I get you. We were never contacted. Now, I'm told that this person was supposed to contact us and they just didn't.
Oh, funny that. Their admin's crap. Mm. What a shock.
But what I'm challenging anyway is Section I of the EHCP because it says, you know, it just seems to be too binary. And when I saw in Section I that they'd written, we believe that he can be supported in mainstream school, but mum and dad have basically decided to electively home educate, I challenged it. I was told this had been taken to senior management. I never received anything back from this. So because of this, they actually said we probably have got a case to say, well, your communication hasn't been very good. You haven't contacted us to tell us anything. So therefore, we should still have the right to tribunal. And if we don't, we should still have the right to maybe request a review of the EHCP already, early.
Part of me thinks, do we do the request after he gets diagnosed? Because he will.
Well, yeah, I think that would be really sensible. But the annoyance for me is still the justification and the fact that, again, I have come across so many families now. This goes beyond us. I have come across so many families who've had this issue with the Section I.
This is systemic.
It is. There are so many parents of, you know, SEND children. And I know that obviously because we deal with autism as individuals and having autistic children, that seems to be the thing we focus on. You know, it won't just be autistic children receiving this treatment, I'm sure, but particularly I'm seeing a pattern of a lot of PDA kids are not well suited to the current school system. A lot of specialist schools seem to not really know how to deal with them either. And they all end up on the scrap heap.
Absolutely. And this is the thing I want to go on to as well. It's not really an option of, you know, oh, even when he does get his diagnosis, because he will. I'm confident in this. You know, our youngest was...
He'll have that by Christmas, I'm sure.
You know, our youngest got his diagnosis recently. Our eldest is blatantly more obvious to someone who actually turns up and diagnoses him. You know, it wouldn't be hard. That's, I mean, don't even go to the CDC. The failings from that, because this is only one half of the coin as well.
It's really tough because we have come across professionals who are brilliant and very knowledgeable, but literally it's one
They're goddamn rarity.
It's like one or two. The rest, you're like, what?
And they end up going on sick or leaving.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, come back. You're the only one that worked.
Please, you knew what you were talking about.
Help me.
Now I'm with this person who doesn't. And they're fuckwit. It's just awful.
Yeah, so like I said, he's been failed on multiple fronts. The local authority let him down. The child development centre let him down by not diagnosing him by this point. because it should have been done.
The issues with not actually making a referral and saying, oh, sorry, that was meant to be done 2 years ago, and oh, we have to start all over again. What?
Yeah, we're not queuing up. We're not queuing up for meeting a delicatessen. It's not just a case of take a ticket and go to the back, you bastards.
It's just not funny.
That's a child you're leaving
it's
behind.
A person, it's just awful.
And it's just been felled everywhere.
It actually, I cry about this a lot, and I do. And
he's the one that upsets me the most, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
Out of the two of them.
You look at him
kids.
And you just see how impacted he is by his differences, and particularly the sensory world that he lives in. And
but this is another point.
It's just awful.
Even if the option of a specialist school became available, because this is the other thing, because I'm thinking, get his diagnosis. I know it opens up more options, but then it's going to be another pain in the ass to deal with, because then they'll be like, oh, you can just put him there now. And you're like, look, he's PDA. The simple fact of the matter is, even your specialist schools are a bit of a joke, because there's this assumed thing where there's some kind of intellectual handicap, like this just some of the programs there, they're not about academic achievement.
No.
And I understand some are different, more different.
Yeah. And also, yes, we understand that, especially for kids like him, you don't want to put too much demand on, because he'll resist it.
No, but at the same time,
you need the ability, because he's capable.
He's capable of so much more. So to literally, like I said, you can't keep him mainstream, but if you send him to a specialist school, you're kind of holding him back in certain degrees of what he's capable of doing.
And I also think, because he's a PDAF, from the little bit of research we've done, and I say little bit because actually you've still got this kind of gatekeeping mentality in our locality where you're not actually allowed to ask the schools
a
great deal about anything. It has to be through the local authority. They have to match you.
Which is absolute shit show, because you can't even vet the school.
No.
I mean, what the fuck?
It's crazy. So then you've got the issue of he's a PDAer, and then you'll get told, oh, he's autistic, so he'll go into a school and this will happen, so let's just use the neat little autism box. Oh, we'll use a PECS card with him. That's not what he needs, though.
Yeah.
We'll use a visual timetable with him. That will stress him out.
I know somewhere you can insert the visual timetable.
These things don't work for everybody, and they don't work for him. And then as soon as they've exhausted these really limited options, they actually grow very frustrated. They don't actually know what to do with him anymore. And then yet again, you're in this position of there's nowhere for him to go. But you get told, well, that's your choice to have him home.
No, it's not.
And you're like, well, it isn't really a choice, is it?
It is inevitability speaking.
It's a choice in terms of I'm looking at all these options and seeing how bad they are for him. And I cannot physically do this to my child. So yes, in that sense, they have put me in a position where, you know, oh, well, you could go to this inappropriate special school, or you could go to mainstream and watch him become more and more traumatized.
It's the equivalent of saying,
or
right,
you can electively home educate. And I'm not being funny, but
all your options on the table are either like the equivalent of being punched in the face or kicked in the nuts. Yeah. And the only other option is to just call the whole thing off and retreat back to home.
You know, I'm sorry, this is probably really wrong. But, you know, somebody said the other day about disabilities, and I hate it. I hate using this, actually, because everyone always uses the wheelchair one. And, like, I think it's a bit mean in a way.
Yeah, walk it off.
But I think it's that kind of thing, you know?
It's awful.
He is disabled, and people seem to be very uneasy about calling him disabled as an autistic PDAer, prominent sensory child, but he actually is. I mean, we all are to a degree, but he really, really is. Like, he can't cope with anything, bless him. He really can't. And even at home, we get stuff. It's not like him being at home full time means that we don't get anything that is challenging from him.
Of course we do.
Or him having those behaviours, because he can't help it.
He's a young child trying to work stuff out for himself.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't got the coping strategies in there yet. He will.
So, of course, we have some of these issues, but the whole point is we're at home. I can be flexible. I can change the demand accordingly. It's just me and him. So it's just so frustrating that we kind of get told that we've very lightly just gone, oh, yeah, we'll just have him home. Because it's, yeah, because sacrificing an income and having my child here full time, is, you know, as much as I'll admit, I can't say that I hate having him here, because I don't. But it is difficult. I am not free to do anything at all. Even the admin I have to do for him. I can't get done in the day while he's with me.
No, the admin's ridiculous. And the trouble is, he wants your constant attention.
He needs it.
So it's not like he can go off and do something because he'll be like, mummy, mummy, mummy.
But yeah, going back to the wheelchair thing, it's like saying, you know, well, your child who needs a wheelchair can either go to this school that has no ramp access,
yep,
or that is literally what I'm comparing it to, but they don't see it.
Well, it's true because basically it's not accessible to him.
Exactly.
And it's exactly the same as a person in a wheelchair.
Just that I know some people would get really angry by that comparison, but I just am struggling to think of a comparison, and I've heard people say that one. So please don't get angry at me. It's just, I don't know how else to express it.
And don't get angry with me either, because I'll get angry back.
Yes, you probably will.
I would.
But no, we're just finding the whole thing very stressful. I broke down earlier and said I just don't think there's anything left in me. I can't do this anymore. I've done this for years, and as much as I want to fight, I just don't think there's anything left.
Well, the thing is, we're doing it as a matter of principle because of the wording. We changed the wording.
Yeah.
It's not about the money, because like I said, we weren't even asking for much. It was just literally a little... Can you at least do the decency of funding a touchscreen tablet that'll help his learning?
I think I asked for a few resources, sort of things like, we've already provided most of it, but I think I asked for an autistic pushchair, an iPad.
It's more so it's not coming out of our budget all the time, because at the end of the day, like I said,
any other
kid gets that money spent on them. And as a taxpayer, why the hell not? I've earned enough in tax to roll him for years.
Mm.
I'm like, so why the crap wouldn't my son have access to some education pot for him? There's money allocated for every child in this country.
Because they've put us in a situation where we did the right thing for him.
And we're getting punished for it.
Wound up being the right thing for them because they get to wash the hands of us.
And we're being financially kicked in the nuts over it. And
but they don't care about that because as long as they're saving money.
I know. And you're thinking, no. This is not right.
And do you know what's really annoying is they're probably sat there patting themselves on the back that they've managed to...
Did well there.
Yeah.
Well done for misleading them.
Oh, gosh, it's just awful.
So, no.
I think as well, it just goes to show, like, the training, as always, is so poor. Like, they all tell you different things and contradict one another, and, like, they don't actually know what their policies are, is how it feels. To say, oh, no, the personal budget is applicable for this, to then be told today, no, because you're electively home educating, you don't qualify... Well, that doesn't make sense from what we were even told in the beginning.
Yes.
When I specifically said again about the EOTAS, I know it doesn't matter even if it is elective home education, you can still apply.
No, we're doing it under EOTAS.
Well, now I'm being told, it's just, they keep changing their minds and I'm just so fed up with it all, to be honest. I'm just fed up. But we are going to fight it.
We're fighting because we're trying to
I'm finding it really difficult because I'm overloaded with admin for both children. Because I've also got to try and apply for the EHCP for my youngest, and I'm overloaded with paperwork, and this is what people don't see. Oh, Kushti, stay-at-home mum, yes, with my eldest here with me permanently, having to do paperwork constantly. And if it's not paperwork, do you know what? It's just the mental, physical and emotional exhaustion that comes along with it. When are they going to start taking our needs as actual parents into account as well? It's just disgusting, this whole system.
Yeah, because you're dealing with it all the time, whereas every other parent, you know, no offense, they get to go away from it during the day.
They usually get a little bit of a break, or they get to go to work, or you know.
Yeah, or stay at home drinking wine and just run the Hoover around. Ooh.
Well, do you know what? So what?
Well, no, I'm just saying. Oh, you know, what a hard life compared to...
I just want to clarify, I wasn't actually trying to do it in a competitive way. It's just that...
I get pissed off of people whinging about their lot. And you think, fuck you.
For me, I don't care. Anyone's entitled to whinge about their lot because, you know, we've got different thresholds and experiences. For me, it's more that I get dismissed a lot as just whinging for the sake of it and being a martyr. And you shouldn't ever whinge about your lot. And you think...
It's about levels.
It's hard.
Because some people just... They really piss me off because they've got all this freedom and they still whinge.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
And you're like, yeah, well, try this side.
Do you know what? I've had so many people say, oh, I couldn't do what you're doing. I wasn't really given a choice then,
we chose this, didn't we?
Yeah.
No, we didn't.
And then you get, at least you're a teacher. Yes, me being a teacher absolutely prepared me for having to do all of this fighting with every kind of bit of energy I have. And to be this emotionally drained, I've gone from being a very strong, resilient person to a broken, crying wreck. they have broken me down, and I didn't think it was possible because I've been broken a lot of times through my life, and I always pick myself up and I come back fighting. And this time I just feel I'm really struggling to pick myself back up.
That's because
they have worn me down.
You're fighting a war on multiple fronts.
Yeah.
That is why. It's not like it's even one thing you're having to take aim at.
But I think this is what I feel really bad about. I feel guilty that I have actually lost this strength almost. I'm tired. But I think they do it on purpose.
You to be tired.
They do.
And they want you to just
give up.
Yeah, tap out. And
but do you know what? It shouldn't be like this. You shouldn't be spending years of your life like this. The amount of stress in my body is probably, I mean, at the moment I have got some medical issues I'm being investigated for, and I strongly believe it's all stress induced. I'm not exaggerating. I think it's all stress induced. Even now as I'm talking about this, I could just feel my body. I'm just not in a good place right now.
Anything else to say?
Yeah, I just think that they need to take more responsibility for what they're doing to our children and to us as adults, as the parents. You know, they need to actually take, you know, the big buzzword over the last few years, isn't it? It's like mental health buzzwords, even like mental health and all that kind of thing. And focus on mental health. It's really important. Well, where is their consideration for my mental health? Where is their consideration for my child's mental health? When I threw back at them, okay, so you're willing, even though you've got proof here from us and the school that he is literally suffering mentally, and it's evident, you're willing and happy to send him back into that environment just to prove that, no, let's just try once again that, you know, with no new provisions, that he's, you know, still going to struggle. Just don't understand it. And then I'm kind of being punished for putting his mental health first. Why are they not thinking long term about, okay, no, this isn't a wise thing to do. This child's clearly traumatized. We don't want to add to this. We support mum and dad to have him at home until we can think of something better to do with him. And we will support mum and dad until that time comes. It is, I think I shouldn't be shocked at this stage after everything we've been through, but I am. I'm surprised. I'm surprised by their lack of care and their incompetence.
Well, no offence. They're civil servants.
It's not all of the staff, is it? It's not, though. I've come across a lot of them and they care and they're just as angry as we are. But as a, you know, as a service, it's just not up to scratch. And
no, I'll expand on my answer. Civil servants, okay? There are a lot who go into roles. I should know. I won't go into it. I'm not one, by the way. But I've worked with them previously.
Obviously, I was.
a lot of the times, in certain institutions, they are normally underpaid by probably, compared to their industry counterparts, by 10 to 15 grand at least. What this does is has a knock-on effect on the quality of the candidate and the level of training, and sometimes they do it based on job grade. So they may have experience in one job at a similar grade, and they might decide, oh, I'm just going to go in that department or whatever, with no prior experience. Now, if they are understaffed, their training will be affected because there won't be enough people to do the actual workload while simultaneously training. So there'll be a deficit. And again, when they're underpaid, they're not exactly going to be superb high performers who are motivated to perform at a certain level. It just doesn't happen.
And also, not just that, you've just triggered a memory that obviously our local authority has been through so many management changes over the last few years. They just don't actually know if they're coming or going, to be honest with you.
So there you go. So you've got no direction, no actual real leadership, no real thoughtful policy, and then you've probably got historical bureaucracy just grinding everything down to a halt. And you have inertia. You have mass inertia. And a lot of this stuff can be changed. It just needs a decision maker to put his neck on the line and go, yeah, let's change it.
Do you know what? I was told off the record by somebody who works in the local authority. They said, we need parents like you to fight. I said, why? They said, look, it's all really complicated, but basically we've had new policies and things come in, including obviously the SEND code of practice and all that kind of stuff, which I think a lot of people don't really fully understand.
By design.
Yeah. And then there was another event I attended actually through the IGPP, I believe. And there was a gentleman on there who talked about like funding and SEND provision, SEND code of practice, and said that, you know, some of those things in there are like law and some things are not. And there's a difference, but it's presented as that as such. So you have to really know your stuff to be able to
wade through the bullshit. Ah, we got a technical difficulty right now. One moment. And we're back in the room. The headphone jack is now placed firmly where it belongs, in the headphone.
It helps. I was getting a bit too passionate there and pulled out the headphone, so I apologise. It keeps cutting out as well, so sometimes my volume control's a bit off. Can't remember what I was saying. But anyway, this gentleman, he was just saying, you know, I think this is the problem as well. You've got a lot of these different things out there and not everybody's really up together on a lot of it. And I've noticed this speaking to different professionals. They've all got like very different ideas and
a variation of the truth.
Understandings. It's very hard. And I think that's where work needs to be done. I do happen to know the local authority are working on some of these things, but it doesn't change. There are simple things like this, and it is so black and white to me. And I get that they're saying, well, it's black and white to us. We said, put him back in school. You said, no. And they're saying it's simple as that we've kind of rejected what they've told us to do.
We've defied them. No, your advice was fucking stupid and was going
to
health. It's going to psychologically affect our son.
It is just as bad as saying, right, you know, it's lava. There's a classroom full of lava. Okay, it's not as bad. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a classroom full of lava and we're telling you, put him in there and just see if it burns him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we think that actually, if we give him like a bucket of water or something, he might be all right. So let's just try it. No, I'm not. Oh, well, in that case, you're on your own. You've chosen not to put him in there, so we're not helping you.
You're being punished.
I know I'm being a bit extreme, but it is, to us,
it's
that extreme.
It's a retaliation.
They're not seeing it. They're not seeing that to us, his mental well-being and emotional well-being is too important to put him through any more of that stress and trauma. We don't want to get him to a point of no return, and that is exactly what we were seeing from him. So why would you put him through more?
It's just not worth it. It really isn't.
And it's not fair, and it's not right, and we shouldn't even be expected to do it. And I think for them to continually keep writing in Section I that, oh, you know, mainstream school is adequate, it's not adequate. He's been in it for a couple of years and not coped. Where are you basing your evidence on? You know, it's just, oh, well, with some support. Do you mean the support he already had? Again, I'm repeating myself, but
yeah,
I'm just so angry.
We've done that bit.
I'm just so angry.
Absolutely. Now, this is the thing. We're not going to go quietly. We are going to take them on. And we are going to suggest that they modify that section to accommodate the situation that our kid is in, because it isn't unique.
No, there are so many families, and there's a lot of projects I'm involved in at the moment, and there are so many parents like us I've met. It's not just us. And one I was starting to tell you about earlier, she comes into my mind because she was actually, it made me really emotional. And she said, I got to a point where I was so broken. Like I said, I took my kid out of school and haven't even taught him for 3 years because I can't. And there's no funding available because, oh, I'm electively home educating. So she couldn't get tutors. So this child's just at home for 3 years. What is going to become of his future?
Absolutely. I mean,
and that's not because he's not capable. No. He's not been given any support. That family have just been pushed aside. And do you know what? The local authority give no damn. I saw something else on a page this week saying, is there like a register of children who are not in school? I don't know if this exists, but I don't think it does.
Well, let's create one. Let's create one.
Yes, we should. We should create a register of all the children who are not actually being educated in school and who are in our position.
AKA the voiceless. The voiceless ones.
Yeah, and I don't mean
the lost generation.
I don't mean the children who are genuinely electively home educated, where parents have gone, this is just what I wanted.
No, definitely not them ones.
I mean the ones who have been kind of pushed out of the school system. There's a group on Facebook that I am going to advertise just because I think it's a really good group, and it's called Not Fine in School. And this is where you will find a lot of these families.
So is that not fine in
not
school?
Not fine in school.
Okay.
And it's good. So there you go. We're not the only ones. And the only reason that I'm fighting this now is because I could easily do what it is they're trying to push us to and go, do you know what? Let's just do it all ourselves and not worry. You know, let's just not bother. But it's not okay, because what about the other families? And sometimes people think I'm being really arrogant when I say, well, I'm trying to change things for other families too, not just ours. And they're like, oh, who do you think you are? I've met a lot of people who have said to me, I struggle with the paperwork, or yeah, I've lost the fight, or I'm too emotionally broken. They're the people I'm talking on
behalf
of.
And it's a very time-consuming process.
It is time-consuming.
And it's designed that way so that you tap out.
Yeah.
So not everyone has the strength left in them, or the time of the day, or the financial resources at their disposal to fight this stuff. So why the hell not?
It's just so harsh. And like I said, if I had to work, I'd be stuffed. There's no way I'd be able to do all this and work and home educate him.
Yeah, I mean...
impossible.
Again, not everyone has that opportunity. And I feel sorry for them, having to basically go, right, we've both got to work, okay, let's throw our kid in the mainstream, because we don't have a specialist provision and an X, Y, and Z. I feel sorry for them as well, who knowingly have to send their kid to school.
Yeah.
And that's awful. It's a shit position to be in.
But yet we're told it's a choice.
It's and not a choice.
That's kind of what we're battling. It's Section I, specifically, of the EHCP. You know, they need to acknowledge that there is a pocket, a very big growing pocket of families and children who are now fitting into the same category as us. And it is not binary. It is not, mainstream or specialist or elective home education. You've got these kind of grey areas in between. Just like the school refusal currently gets kind of marked as an absence or a truancy or whatever. And it's not, is it? There's a lot of reasons behind that. We've had that with our children.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not... and actually, like, our youngest used to have issues of transitions.
Absolutely.
Fine when he was there at preschool. But trying to get him there was really, really difficult. They didn't understand that. And, you know, you get judged for it. And if it's anxiety-induced behaviour, then that should really not be... it should be noted down as something separate. This is the problem. Our society is kind of still pushing these Victorian ideologies, and we should have really moved on from this. And I actually can't understand how we're even having to have these discussions.
It's just common sense. It shouldn't be the case. But again... The policymakers are idiots. I've had enough of it.
It doesn't have to be this way. But I'm really exhausted, and I think we need to maybe revisit this.
To be continued, definitely.
and how things progress. Wish us luck, and please get in touch if you've had this experience yourself. If you've got anything you can suggest that might be useful to us or anybody on the blog, and if you need any support yourself, like, please do get in touch. We need to all help each other. It's the only way that we're going to do this.
Absolutely. And I'm going to sign off with the following. No child left behind. Every child deserves access to the same resources to fulfill their potential. Everyone has the right to succeed. And it's as simple as that. There should be no one left behind. Good night.
Bye.